know. I'm trying to block it out. I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Robert. My home group is a Wednesday night open speaker meeting in Jensen Beach, Florida. It meets every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. Bob has been a few times. Some other people have been there. We had one of your speakers from here last 2 weeks ago, David. Spoke that was from this group for a long time. That's my home group. My sobriety date is November 16th, 1984. That's not to impress anybody. That's just in case they get a pension plan. I want to make sure I collect for all my time served. You know, in case there's something at the end of it, and there's a treat or something. Because getting up and doing this stuff, really, you know, I can make a joke about it. I'll tell you right off the bat, I don't take myself seriously. I take the process of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book really seriously. I'll touch on it a little bit. I'm scattered. I got whatever one of those letter diseases are, probably. You know, I'm an ANDA. I got a lot of ANDAs. You know, I just don't try to bring them up or announce them when I'm at the front of the meeting, like tax evader or, you know, other problems you might have. That's Tuesday. Monday, isn't it? Monday is tax day? Yeah. Chapter 5, it says we're supposed to tell in a general way. General. Not graphic. Wait, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. You know, because I can tend to lean towards graphic sometimes. Sometimes for shock value, sometimes for laughs. You know, I was born in Fort Pierce, Florida, 1955. My mother and father met at the University of Miami. My mom was from Long Island and had gone down there to get her MRS. My dad had gotten out of the service after the Korean War. He was going until the GI Bill ran out. He was a GED kind of guy from high school. They were going to get married. A funny thing happened on the way to getting married. It was 1955. And my mom got pregnant. And they got married. They ran away and got married. They didn't tell my grandparents. My mother's mother would have killed them probably at the time. So she was a little, we're going to get to her in a little while. She's a little Irish woman about this tall. One of my favorite enablers. I love them. You got to have them if you're going to be good in this thing. You know what I mean? You know, they'll help you get here quicker. A lot quicker, those enablers will. So, somebody, the same kid that told me there was no Santa Claus, I think it was the one that explained the nine-month thing about pregnancy and women, you know, the little sex talk you get on the street before you ever get it at home. They didn't have it in school then, I don't think. I don't remember. If they did, I missed that day, and I missed a lot of them. So my parents got married in June. I was born in December. I kept going backwards. You couldn't get to nine no matter how you did it. So I knew right then when my parents fought sometimes, maybe it was because of me. It's not why I'm an alcoholic, but it was just a good excuse when I was a kid. I'm an escape artist, long before I ever picked up a drink. I was a fantasizer and a dreamer, and I never wanted to be where I was at, even when it was good. I didn't want to be there. I was never comfortable being me. Only thing is, I didn't know that till after I'd been here a while. You guys are the ones that showed me how to figure out why I was uncomfortable. Because I look good. The pictures look great. I'll get that later. That's for me. Have them call back. But I always was just never, you know, and I had friends, and we look at the photographs today. My wife's got the hall of shame. We bought a different house. It's got a shorter hallway. I've never been so grateful in my entire life. We used to have one that was about 14 feet down each side, you know, and everything. There's a three set she's got that's really good. When I first met her parents, and I had a tie, shirt and tie on that night, so it must have been like either Easter or Thanksgiving or Christmas. And then one of those holidays where I had to look stupid. So the first one, I'm smiling. The second one, I'm leaning a little bit. And the third one, I'm like this. Yeah. One eye, baby. And she won't get rid of those pictures. You know? So I look back and it looks good. But in some of them, I can see. I remember the one. I don't know what I did on trick-or-treat. It was a Halloween thing. I remember my dad had yelled at me. And to this day, when people know me and they see the picture, they go, man, you look sad. You look lost in that picture. Man, I can tell by your eyes. There's nobody home. And I go, that's just how I felt. And I'm not afraid to look at that picture still today, because it reminds me of how I felt. I was very uncomfortable. Magic happens. Real magic happens. First, my dad's father dies. My dad goes from being a pretty fun, go-getting, have a good time. He put television stations on the air in the early 60s, and it was big business and good money, and the house was always filled with people having a good time. Player piano went till 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. Me and my brothers, once in a while, we'd come down the next morning. I found out years later I did this too. My brother took the cigarette butt out of one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I started early, and then, you know, 20 years later I was still
paying the
cigarette butt.
Great.
Wow, you know?
Yeah.
Full circle. So, I go, wow, it feels a little different. Didn't get drunk. Wasn't anything like that, but felt a little different. The warm, a little bit of glow, just a sip of alcohol. It wasn't a lot. We had a summer place in upstate New York. You know, I was from Florida. I went back and forth to my grandparents. So my father's drinking got a little worse. I'd used to come down and spend some time in Florida. You know, they'd let me get out. I acted out. Whatever kids do today that, you know, that they get the stuff for, but they just moved me around. You know, different grandparents, different places. His summer place up in Wilson, New York. And my mother just faxed me a picture of it the other day. And some new ones. And we, she's talking about wanting to get a place up there for a month this summer. I'm going, oh God, that memory lane. But I go, a kid next door was 2 years older than I was. And he goes, we're going to go down where the big kids are. And we're going to get some beer. We're going to steal it. Now, you're going to tell your parents that you're sleeping over at our place. And I'm going to tell them I'm at your place. We'll sneak out, we'll steal the beer, and we'll get drunk. Just like the adults. Because look at what a good time they're having when they're drunk. His father was the number one Ford dealer or whatever in upstate New York. And there were always people and adults. And I did. I had that association. I kind of got the picture he was drawing. And I talked to Gail Gills, talks about her grandson. I have a son that's 12 years old at home. Going to be 13. And in a lot of ways, he's so far ahead of the curve. I'm grateful. Because I did the math on it. For a long time, I thought I was 12 or 13 or 14 when I took my first drink. I wasn't. I'd already lived in California. I was 9 years old that night. I was 9 years old. And I never thought about that until after I'd gotten sober. And I went and I, with Larry, went to the end of the island where the big kids weren't out there. Really, the big kids. There was no car on this island. It was actually a little island. Take a boat over to get to it. It wasn't 100 yards of water, but there were no cars on it. And the kids that were probably 14 or 15 that didn't have cars on the land side where they could go drive back into Buffalo or over to Niagara Falls where there was probably the really good stuff was happening, you know. So we go down there and they got this big old-fashioned metal tub. And I never forget this because this is the focal point for me. Big old-fashioned wash tub, metal. Larry goes, you got to go through the bushes, stick your hand in, pull a six-pack out. I go, no problem, no problem. I work my way through the bushes. There's the thing. They got a bonfire going. They're all drunk, hollering. Their little AM radio's going. They can't hear. I get my hands in there. The water's ice cold. Oh, God. Fingers still get stiff talking about it. And I pull that thing out. And this was just before the... they just started with the pop tops. The ones that curled back. It's real hard to get them off. Remember those? And it's in the cardboard wrapper. It's Carling's Black Label. And the cardboard's starting to fall apart because it's wet. And I'm trying to get the whole six pack and ice is sliding. And I know I'm going to get caught. Okay? And I'm like living and dying in the same breath. It was an unbelievable experience. It's kind of like that now, you know? And I'm like, I'm going, wow, if I can just pull this off, I'll be a hero. So we went, I got the beer, we got it, we drank them, argued over who's the last one was. Here comes the next thing that I found out after I was in Alcoholics Anonymous quite some time. For a long time when I was new, I said alcohol made me a liar, a cheat, and a thief. Done all those before I drank and didn't know it. did it right that night, lied about where I was being, was stealing somebody else's booze, which, you know, I could justify they had probably stolen. They weren't 21, so come on, it wasn't really stealing, you know. So we go and we drink them, and that's it. Later that summer, I meet this other kid, Mike. Mike dies a few years later down in Fort Lauderdale somewhere in a canal at about 15 or 16 years old, alcohol and drugs. This is 1967, 68 by then. And we're breaking into cottages on this little place. People had locked up early to go home. And we're breaking up, trying to get in and get, man, never again. The guy with the funny hat and the red suit, beef eaters, whatever it is, Jan. God, we got a hold of a bottle of that, and I was sick. Well, later that night, I started, this is my first thing, I found out later in AA, well, not AA, I think it was one of the other ones, the codependent, wannabe, it was a whole cock, I think it was, children of adult children of alcohol, until one of those meetings by mistake, and I went, and they had explained to me I was getting mixed messages, and from my parents, and I go, I'm a little buzzed. And these big kids got my football, and they're playing with it in the dark out in the park, and I want it back. And you can't use it here because I want to show you how spiritual I am, so I won't say the words that I yelled at them to get my football back because I'd heard these big words. And so I did it. Here comes my dad. I'm thinking, here comes Dad. He'll help me. Dad's a little buzzed. You know, when my dad was buzzed, it was two things were going to happen. He was either going to be real happy with what you were doing, or he was not going to be happy with what you were doing. There was no gray. There was no gray area. And you never knew. It was a crapshoot. So, the blast to the front of the head. Now my nose is bleeding. Here's where we get to the mixed message part. He's taking me into the bathroom in a cottage. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, he's explaining, you don't talk to people that way. And he's saying the same words I just was using, so I wasn't really getting that. But I go, okay. And he's getting a wash rag with soap and stuff. And I thought, my nose is bleeding. It's all over my shirt. It's everywhere. I can see it in the mirror. And I thought he was going to wipe my face off. He shoved the wash rag down my throat to teach me about swearing in public because I had embarrassed him. You know? The other thing my dad used to like to do, and I don't blame my father for anything. When I get to that, I'll let you know. But he used to like to break glass to get people's attention. Like when my mother used to lock him out. I'll come in. So years later, that became a thing. My wife wouldn't move one time years later unless I promised I wouldn't break any more windows. Because every time we moved, it was like, you know, looked like an abandoned house by the time I got done when I was drinking. So I got through all that. And that was my drinking experience that summer. I'd like to tell you that, man, I crossed the line. I was doomed. I was done. Didn't happen. Moved to California in 1968. I'm 12 years old. It's a lot different in California in 1968. You know, and out of respect for, I don't think there's any, there might be a couple of pure alcoholics in here, but out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, I just talk about alcohol tonight. But those of you who know, and that's all that really matters, you know. I'm not going to talk about, you know, soaking the brown paper bag and a little gasoline ahead of time and putting the airplane glue in it and off in it, okay? I'm not going to get into the whole run of all that kind of stuff you can do, because those aren't drugs, so you can say that. So, yeah. My thing is to offend old-timers every once in a while if I can. But I try to, somebody told me the only reason they don't want you talking about them is because they're all on Valium, and I'm not sure if that's true or not. But it could be, I don't know. They all got heart conditions now, you know? And they get a little annoyed. So I don't know. I'm just reporting what I hear. I just don't have any facts to back that up. So I get to California. Fast forward, the fast life starts. And by the time I'm in college, alcohol's picking where I go to school. Went to a basketball tournament, and I'm not tall, so you can tell it wasn't my sport. Actually, I played soccer. Believe it or not, I weighed 135 pounds, ran some 5-minute miles, got pictures to prove it. But we went there, and went to that college, and my dad could have got me in quite a few schools, and I didn't have great grades, but my dad could have got me in the schools on probation, schools that you would recognize the name of, okay, not Point Loma College. Point Loma College is on the Pacific Ocean now.
Okay.
The sun sets in your dormitory window.
Oh, wow.
You can hear the surf. There are no houses between you and the beach. You can take your surfboard down and go surfing in the morning instead of going to class. Oh, gee, I wonder if that ever happened. Tijuana was about a 20-minute drive in those days. And if you're 18, and in California in those days, alcohol, you had to have good fake ID. I got arrested for not having good fake ID. That's part of my story. $25 fine, embarrassing time in court. You know, as you're humiliated by a judge for using someone else's ID and couldn't get the guy's license back for him. You know, that was another bad, you know, that amends was a pain in the butt, let me tell you. So, like Tijuana, $25 in 1973, and Tijuana was like a weekend. So my drinking career takes off there, and all the other stuff. But alcohol first, alcohol last. I always remember that. Fast forward, I get 1979, I'm back there in Florida hiding. Because the good guys want me, the bad guys want me, and nobody that knows me wants me. So I'm not doing real well, except for the little Irish grandmother. Firstborn grandson, never do no wrong. Sure, come stay, your grandfather will pick you up at the airport. You know. What had happened is the house I was living in was raided, and some people did some serious time, and no one ever rolled over on me, and that's the grace of God. It has nothing to do with anything of being smart. I don't take any credit for that. I'm not proud of the guy that had to do it. I hid down there for a while, hid in places like Craig, Missouri, other places that you'll never hear of all the way back. In 1979, I'm out here at Nettles Island, just outside of Jensen Beach. It's trailers on, travel trailers on lots on a man-made island in the middle of the water, in the Indian River. I'm hiding, drinking, it's cheap, it's easy. But I run out of everything I got. My grandparents are on, like, at that time, between the two of them, I think $400 and some a month Social Security. I'm going to drain them. If, you know, my habit, that don't last a couple days, so I don't know what we're going to do. Same thing. Go back to when I was drinking with that kid and I stole the six-pack of beer. You know the lie we told the next day? We stole the case. You know, when everybody asked, we stole the case of beer when it was only a six-pack. My grandmother takes me over to Publix. It had been about 2 weeks. Now, this is the longest time in probably about a 5-6 year period where I had been sober. No drugs, no alcohol, no nothing. Haven't drank. I go, man, this is bad. I'm going crazy. I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what to do, but I can't leave there because nobody knows where I'm at. My grandmother goes, come into town to Winn-Dixie with me. Help me with the groceries. Sure, anything. Just to get in a car, go somewhere, see something different. Do anything. We come back. There's this little place that's gone now. There's a little part of the building's left. It used to be called Poor Bob's. Martin County is the only place you can get a drink on Sundays when I was a little kid. I remembered that place. My grandmother pulls in the parking lot after Winn-Dixie. I go, St. Margaret, my God, how did you know? She goes, let's get a beer. I remember my grandmother quit drinking a long time ago. Her and my grandfather converted to some type of Eastern religion. I don't know what it was. I'd never heard of it. You know, and they had sworn off drinking and cigarettes and all this stuff. And she goes, you know what? I'd just like to have a beer with my grandson. Here's where my story about alcoholism starts. I haven't had a drink in 2 weeks. My grandmother and me sit up on a bar stool. All she can do to get on a bar stool, as short as she was. Gets on a bar stool, they sort of, if you're going back out, it's just for those of you that are going back out, for those of you that are planning to stay, never drink where they serve in Pilsner glasses. It's the biggest ripoff. The bottoms are real thick, narrow center, it can't be more than 6 or 8 ounces of beer. It's a ripoff. There's no doubt about it, you know. If you see those up there, don't go somewhere else and drink. You're not going to get your money's worth for draft beer. I know this now. So my grandmother, I'm lifting my drink up and I hear this clunk. on the bar counter. My grandmother had tossed hers back like a truck driver. We were talking about truck drivers earlier. And it hits the bar. I hadn't even gone yet. And she's sliding off the stool. She's leaving. I have no money. She's leaving. I drink the beer. I don't know you. I never went in a bar and had one beer. That's the only time in my life I can remember going into a bar and having one drink. So, Grandma goes back to the island. Wasn't that fun? The terror setting in. What am I going to do? Fast forward. I'm breaking into trailers. 9 years old. Now I'm 24 years old. Breaking into trailers. Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. I need more or whatever that is. My friend comes, rescues me. We go back to California. I never went to treatment. Never went to a detox. Not that I didn't need to. I don't know anything about them. But I remember a lady tried to grab me to do something, and all I remember is Jeannie Vander, what was her name? She's dead now. She's a friend of my parents. She goes, you know, you need to do something. I said, you know what? All I need is a good woman. That's my problem. So I found the second best enabler I ever met. It'll be 27 years this July, so you know she's an enabler. She'd have left a long time ago. And we got married because I was going to fix Robert. Okay, but during that time, in those few months that I got back, I was living under the Ocean Beach Pier in San Diego because my friends from college from 3 years before had been kicked out wanted nothing to do with me. Nobody did. I had rusty zipper and yellow tennis shoes because I used to go in the ocean to bathe myself, and I was too afraid to go into public bathrooms. So I just went swimming in my jeans every day to take care of whatever it was I needed to take care of, and that's the way I lived, and I didn't see anything wrong with it. Met this woman, got a job. I actually got a job. Says taking it, having a job or not drinking on the job. I always liked that. I didn't have to have one in order to drink on it, you know. Never worked since I had those other careers. I got the real work, employment. We moved a few times because my father was a geographical cure king. And so I said, this is good. My wife grew up in the same house for a long time, so the moving thing was fun at first. Let's sell all this furniture for money that we need, and we'll get new furniture when we get to the new place. Well, it's good a couple times, and then, you know, women, that gets real old with them, you know, because the furniture's a little less, not quite the same quality. You know, sheets aren't really drapes, you know. And a poor woman, and I mean, she had 5-star credit, it was gone in no time. You know, it was a disaster. But I wound up in her parents' basement for a little while in Massachusetts. We left there, and I wound up in a town called Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. So I want to get to what happened. And I was there 9 months and staggered into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't make it the first trip there either. And what I got to tell you when I start to talk about AA now is that I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I'd gone to my first meeting in February and got sober in November. The only problem was that February was 1969 and November was 1984. I had been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous. My father finally stayed sober in 1972 until the time he died in 1998. My mother celebrated 25 years on the 4th of this month. I have another brother who's been sober almost 20 years. I think it'll be 20 years this July. And my kid brother, we don't know. He didn't for a long time, and I don't know. I think he's got the left-handed cigarettes once in a while, but, you know, he's not in jail. He only drank 9 times, my brother, in his entire life, but he got 8 felony charges out of the 9 times he drank. So we don't know if he's an alcoholic or a problem drinker, because every time he drank, he had problems. I mean, the kind my dad paid a lot of money to make go away. Judges in California that somebody sponsored. You know, if they moved them to Florida, they wouldn't do anything. That's how serious it was. So I'd been exposed to AA, and my dad had quit drinking at 40, so I knew I still had some time. I was only 28. Problem is, I'm on the express. I'm doing the other stuff. I'm not on the slow train. I'm not on the scotch and water train. I'm not on it. I'm on the garbage can train. I'm on the my favorite's yours, because it keeps me from spending more money. You know, if you said, what would I like a drink, I never asked you what kind it was. If I did this with something, I didn't ask which way it was going. I figured you'd find out later. Never questioned anything. Now I'm in Wilkes-Barre. The bed's wet from all kinds of stuff, wondering why she's not sleeping with Superman anymore. You know. And I slide out of the bed one morning. And I fall on the floor. I'm trying to get up. And I go, God, I can't live like this anymore. Not realizing at that moment I'd said a prayer that was going to be answered. Had no idea at the moment. I remember it clear as a bell. Got in a shower, showered off, went out, told her, oh, look, I'm going to AA tonight. And I hadn't done AA with her, really. I mean, I'd gone to a couple meetings once to get the heat off. That was it. So she'd do the dishes and the laundry and fix everything, make nice, and that's it. I go down. It's Tuesday night in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, St. Stephen's Church. It's a big meeting hall. Big. It's got maybe seats 400. Thing's empty. Place is empty. There's a beginner's meeting in the schedule, which now I figured out later my father had brought and left with my wife on one of his pastors because he couldn't stay. My father couldn't stay when he saw me. He was sober 12 years at that time, and he couldn't stay. He'd come, and he couldn't stay. We'd go to dinner or whatever. He had an RV. He was going to stay in it. We lived up in the mountains. Had plenty of place to park. Couldn't stay. I go down to this meeting at St. Stephen's. The room's huge. I mean, it's from here to the middle of the street, from the front to the back where the podium was, where the speaker was going to speak. My wife comes in with me, and some lady whisks her up the side staircase. She disappears, like her feet never touched the stairs. And it was Al-Anon, and that's not good for an alcoholic because the word no is right in the middle of Al-Anon. You know, when you look at it, I see the no right there. That's what jumps out of me out of Al-Anon, no. I get in there. I'm sitting at the table closest to the door in this big room. And there's a guy all the way up by the podium. You could barely see his head. Next thing I know, the guy's sitting across from me. I'm going, I feel terrible. I ain't drank in about 8-10 hours. I'm sick. Real sick. And he goes, hey, you're new, huh? My name's Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic. I go, really? I'm Robert. He goes, new, huh? I go, I said that twice. And I go, I realized later when I was going home, it was probably the bread ties that were holding my shoes together. I just strung a couple of bread ties and the bags together so I could tie my shoes. I broke the shoelace, but I was going to the meeting anyway. So Jimmy was self-centered. Jimmy didn't care about me. Jimmy didn't ask me what I did for a living. Jimmy didn't ask me how much I made. Jimmy didn't ask me where I lived. Jimmy didn't even ask me if I really wanted to stay sober. Jimmy sat there for 15 minutes and told me all about Jimmy. What it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Pretty good, captive audience, pal, you know. He was a boxer. He thought, not tonight, though. You know, he goes, does the whole thing. I go, well, you are sick at that point, because he told me I got kicked out of the Salvation Army 2 months before I got sober. I cracked open a bottle of Windex and drank it. I thought it was moose sitting on a table. And I'm going, man, you do need help. You know, see why you're here, you know? So he did a meeting card. It was a little card that folded over. It would fit in your wallet. In that county, it showed all the meetings for that week on a small card. And I goes, I'll be at the West Piston meeting tomorrow. He put his name and phone number on the back and walked away. I'm thinking the guy's challenging me. Like, I don't know where West Piston is. I can show this guy. I know where West Piston is. But I got a 1968 Torino. 1984.
Oh my gosh.
With no muffler.
Oh my gosh.
No passenger or driver's side windows.
Oh my gosh.
Okay? And I drive there, and it's probably not registered to me. Because I wasn't real good at, like, getting vehicles registered and insured and whatever. I got the keys, I drove them. I mean, sometimes I didn't get the keys and I drove them, but, you know, I just drove them, you know. That's another sub. That's another anda. And we don't go into that one. I get there at noon. Jimmy must have called up all of his friends. This is a bunch of people there. And they had cell phones, and that's not how I did it. But Pizza Joe, his sponsor, was there. And he's going, come here, you got to see this. That's all I heard him say. Because I was out putting the blue tarp over my car with the cinder block on top to keep the rain that was coming down from going in the windows. Because this is a pretty cool ride. I want to restore this. There's no trunk. There's no trunk. The fumes are coming back in the car. I probably looked goofy when I got there. That's probably what detox was, a little bit of, you know, carbon monoxide poisoning to bring me down. So I get there, and he's laughing, and he goes, hey, kid. I go, what? He goes, why don't you get two cinder blocks? Because the breeze is blowing the blue things up. I go, why? Because you put one on each side, then it won't rain in the window when the tarp's over the car. I go, well, you guys are pretty good. You guys are pretty good here today. I'm learning something at this AA, you know? Come to another meeting. They went around the meeting, and it was about 8-10 guys and a couple of women. It was a noon meeting. And I don't really remember what should happen. I know there were two speakers at the meeting I went to Tuesday night. They said, come back tonight. We got a beginner's meeting and a speaker meeting. That's an awful long way, and gas is $1 a gallon now, you know. And I don't know. I went to 101 meetings in 65 days and went out one more night. You know, and I think you get here when you get here, you know. I don't know if I had to drink again one night or not. I don't know what it was that I had to do. But I had gone out of town, and I'd shared at a meeting that I was uncomfortable on this trip I'd gone, and I had to make it again. And the lady said, well, why don't you go home a different way? Don't get gas at that same gas station with a beer sign screaming at you across the street in the bar when you're filling up the car. I couldn't do it. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know any better. I go the same way, and the next thing you know, I'm in there, and I say, give me two screwdrivers. Make them doubles. You won't be back fast enough. The guy goes, you sure you want those? And I said, yeah. Now, this is in Mannheim, Pennsylvania, right near Lancaster. I'm 80-some miles from home in the same car at night with one headlight that flickers. So, you know, nothing like getting a little attention going while you're driving at night with the cops, you know. Gosh. One night, you know, so I said, oh, God, I've ruined it. I've done whatever. I come to and some Amish farmers telling us to leave. I'm with my new best friend, business partner, whoever from the bar. I don't know who this guy is in the car. Could have been the night slasher. You know, you go, whoa, hey, where'd you come from? Hey, at least it wasn't a strange woman, you know what I mean? So I'm safe on that one. He goes, we don't sell drugs here, you know? The guy's like, there's no drugs here. So the guy gets out of the car at the end of the road. I go to a Wawa's. They don't sell beer. It's after 12 o'clock. I go, oh, my God. It's November 15th. It's a Thursday night. Same thing. It's rainy. It's going to be dangerous driving home. And I'm falling apart. I'm shaking really bad. I don't know how many drinks I had. It doesn't matter. I had the first two, and I don't know what happened after that. Everything they'd said in the meetings was true. I knew that now. Man, everything them guys said, and that old saying about a head full of AA and a belly full of booze, and I was screwed up because I had actually listened in those 65 days. I think I wanted to write. I just didn't know what to do. I was too afraid to ask for help. I was sitting there. I'd take something if you gave it, but I couldn't ask. And asking's big in here. You got to ask for help. It's just not going to fly out of the sky. And I go, what am I going to do? I'm a nervous wreck. I'm pacing in the store, and the lady goes, no, you can't buy any alcohol. You're going to have to leave. And I'm thinking, she's going to call the cops this way. I'm pretty smart, you know. She's going to call the cops. Give me those 6 cans of whipped cream in the bottom of the thing. So I get the 6 cans of whipped cream. I pay for them. Always one in every room. And they're going out the window about every 10 miles, one of them at a time. Just enough to hold it together, baby. Just enough to keep from falling apart. I get back. I go to my Friday night home group. I join the Friday night meeting there. I go there. Little Scotty, the little Scottish guy's going, Robert's going to chair the meeting next month. He's going to have 90 days. They're in a business meeting before the meeting. I got to make my big announcement. And Charlie, my sponsor's sponsor, who was at that group goes, Robert won't be chairing the meeting in December. It's like I had guilty written all over my face, you know. I was like, So I told him, and the one lady said, oh, God, it'll be okay. And Charlie goes, don't pat him on the back. You'll push him in the grave. This guy needs one more pat on the back. You'll put him in the grave. And I said, you're probably right. I hung out with Charlie and Pizza Joe and Jimmy till I moved. I went to L.A. I did all the things you're not supposed to do in the first year. I moved, changed jobs, told everybody I gotta get a divorce, it's her. They said the same thing applies as to not having a relationship in the first year. You can't get out of one the first year. You gotta tough it out, she did. So I said, okay. Then came a little later when the thing goes, you know what, maybe it's too rough, I need a divorce, whatever's going on. They said, you know what, you can get a divorce 1 year from today, as long as you don't change the way you feel anytime during that year about her. And then you can get a divorce. But if you change the way you feel on one day in that year, you have to start over right then for the next year. Not going to work for a guy like me. So my wife went to Al-Anon for a while. I went to AA. We went to Southern California. I met my sponsor there, Dave. Dave was great. We'll get to the part about confusing activity for action in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was great at that. Come to the meet and set up chairs, wipe ashtrays. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm bringing Johnny. I'm taking Joe home. I'm doing this. I'll get the cake. I'm up, up, none of Saw number 9. That means write the checks. Was never getting to number 9. Owed way too many people way too much money. No sense in doing the ones above 9 because eventually you're going to get to 9. And that means I got to pay back all that money. And I'm living in that fear for 3 years, 7 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days. Now you can either drink in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can go nuts, or you can leave. And maybe you don't drink. Maybe you just go crazy because I don't know what happens to the ones that don't come back. Not all of them die drunk. I think some of them just die miserable, really miserable. And my wife had gone back to live with her mother for a little while. We were having a little respite. I was going to move back to Pennsylvania. Maybe if I went back where my AA roots were, things would be better because I'm just as good with geographics and sobriety as I was drinking. Maybe this will work. It'll be better over there. Or this job, that. Whatever's going to fix it. It's just two letters in the word. So it ain't going to get fixed. I get ready to go in the shower because I'm going to go to a Wednesday night meeting. Wednesday night meetings have been my home group since I got to California. They're speaker meetings. I'm real big on speaker meetings. I don't make it. The house is packed up. The trucks are in the driveway. Everything's ready to go. I get in the shower. I get in the shower to take a shower, and I get in there, and I start crying. I haven't cried since I was 7 years old. My grandfather died. My dad left the house. Started drinking bad. Held every emotion that was that way from then till then. I'm 3 years, 7 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days sober, and I'm going to lose my mind. I start crying. I don't remember what happens next. Shower door fell open, I guess. I fell out. My feet were pretty cold because by the time my sponsor got in there 3 hours later, the water was still running on my feet. And I don't know about your hot water heater. It ain't going to last that long, you know. My sponsor comes in, and he knows he can hear. He knows something's wrong because he's yelling. And that's what gets my attention because the front door's unlocked. There's nothing in the house to steal, so I lock the door. He comes in, I'm in the bathroom, and I'm just like laying on the floor still, and I'm, I don't know what to do. And he comes and he picks me up off the floor. And the reason I picked Dave as a sponsor, when I first got there, my motives weren't totally pure. Dave was dating a couple different newcomers at one time, had a nice car and a big pinky ring, because it is attraction, not promotion. And I was attracted to all that stuff. Let's get real honest. So, but Dave was good. Dave was what I needed. Dave gave me just enough rope to hang myself. And that's what I did, almost, literally. He picked me up and gave me a big hug. Now, I don't know about the rest of you and your showering methods. I don't wear a bathing suit or anything when I take a shower. And I was all for hugging girls when I got to AA, trust me. Still am. Love hugging them girls. But the guys, whew, you know, L.A., so they never know for sure, you know. Dave whispers in my ear, is it painful enough yet? And I said, I think so. He calls my father, who's sober, I don't know, more years than that, 15, 16 years sober now. They come to the house. I go to Dave's house. We sit there and, you know, we decide that, you know, where I'm at in the steps, which is, you know, I'm not drinking. And I'm going to meetings. And that ain't even in the steps. You know, pay real close attention when you read them. It's not even in there, not drinking, going to meetings. It says powerless over alcohol. My hang up real quick was number two. Restored to sanity meant you previously were. Restored, I've fixed cars, I've fixed flooring, I've done everything. Restored means you were, and I always thought I was crazy since the time I was that little kid. Okay? You can't make me something I wasn't, and that's what I was fighting, and I didn't know it. But I'm broke down now. And I'm broke down with some men in my life that are real important, my dad and my sponsor. My dad leaves, he's just there as a support. Dave and I work through the thing. 2 days later, I'm ready to go to Pennsylvania. Not really, but I gotta go because I'm done blowing it up there. Now I gotta figure it out, get my wife, and take care of business. And you know what I got in my hand? My nine-step list. All the people I'm gonna pay that money to, because here's the fear, man. And I got no job where I'm going. That's 1988. That's where I met Bob shortly thereafter, the following year. Bob's anniversary is this month. I wound up in Massachusetts in my mother-in-law's basement, again, this time sober, so you can do it both ways. It's no fun either way, you know what I mean? I started working on all that stuff. And my wife and I had done some stupid things, and because I know better than she does, she'd had accounting experience, but I know how to fill out the tax forms better than somebody who's got some experience at it. Actually, the government owed me money. I thought I was dodging them, they owed me money. Enough to where we could buy a house. We came to Florida, down payment for a house. So we moved. We did the last geographic. We came down here. I had some grandmother that was sick, and my other grandmother had died, a little Irish lady, and my grandfather wasn't doing well. My mom was here, kind of stuck with them, and I said, you know what? Spell. My wife's mother died a few months later, but we were there for that year and a half that my wife got to spend with her. Oh, it's a great plan, because I don't know what it is. It's a great plan, because I don't know. When I know and try to fix it, it gets all foobarred, man. It gets ruined easy. Guys like Bob pick my wife up. People don't know my wife in here. Pick my wife up at the airport. They do stuff. They come and help load the house and move the furniture. Guys that Gail was talking about that I hardly knew. When I was there a year or so, I got to know them, but I didn't really know them like I know people today. But they pitched in. I got down here. My wife and I are here. We're struggling a little bit. Things aren't going my way as usual. 14 years you tried to have a kid, and not for lack of trying. You know, believe me. She could tell you anytime. You know, and God goes, well, here we go. Got this kid. He's going to be born in Philadelphia. Now here's the catch. The parents, the mother's 15. The father's not going to be around, who's 16. She has the baby. The parents' insurance pays for it. The lawyer in Philadelphia is a pro-life attorney, so he just charges us the $500 that his paralegals need, because he can't ask them to do something for free, but he won't charge for what he believes in. Look at this beautiful baby. What do you do with this, man? Wow! This is what we wanted, this, right? Because I'm like, whoa! Because this looks like a whole lot of responsibility to me. And I just got most of that stuff cleaned up in nine. I don't need new messes, I'm thinking. Because that's me being selfish again. And I get down here, and I got people in AA. We didn't know. I wouldn't let my wife know because we weren't sure about the adoption. And these people came and put bassinets in the houses and decorated the rooms and brought toys and did everything. And it was great, you know? And he's 12 years old. He got suspended for the third time in 7 days for a 3-day suspension today in school. Been out of school suspension twice for fighting. I'm probably the worst dad in the world. Sometimes I feel that way because I'm like feeling like a grandfather and a dad. I'm going to be 52 and he's 12. And I'm going, man, he's going to be like my grandson, man. It'd be easier. You know, go see your parents. Somebody with a little more authority. My grandmother, my mother's driving me nuts because she's a school teacher. She thinks she knows what's right, and I love her. You know, and Gail was sharing with me tonight before the meeting. They got to back out once in a while and just let us screw it up ourselves because we can do that, you know. Long and short of it is, I work with a lot of guys today. I try to. My goal is to give somebody a one-year medallion every year. That's my goal in AA. You know, and since that day in November, I haven't I found it necessary to take a drink. I just haven't, you know. It's not a lie. After some times, I could have used one, man, you know. And I go, but I didn't take it. Because either some guy that's working with me or some guy I'm working with calls. And something's happening and somebody needs something or whatever. And we go and we do it. We got a little hall like this down there called Fellowship Hall. You know, and it's got all the greatest mix of people in the world in it. You know, my home group, I'm pretty much the headmaster because all the old timers have died off. It was the first meeting in Martin County in 1950. It's still going. And part of that in me now is to, like, get some of these guys ready for when it's time because there's nobody left. I mean, there's one guy, but he's just, they got to drive him to the meeting. He can't even see. He's like the honorary poobah. We just stand him up every year. He was 40-some-odd year medallion this year, 44, and went, good, you know, that's it. Great, John, sit back down. Spoil yourself. John. John's got a long way to go. We think John has soiled himself a few times, but we're not really sure. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the fellowship. I have a New Year's Eve party every year. It started when we got here because I wanted to make sure I got the new people. I knew for some reason I was staying when I got here. I knew I wasn't running or going anywhere anymore. And last year, John cooked for the pasta, and we had just over 400 sober alcoholics and their families come through between 6 o'clock at night and midnight and share a little bit of that day with us, you know, and the new year and get a new start and do all that. And, you know, I got to tell you, from where I was crawling around on that floor in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, to where I'm at tonight, man, I'd have never made that walk if it wasn't for people like you in rooms like these in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thanks.